Welcome to Pickle Me This, the officially unofficial podcast for Rick and Morty on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Today we're covering Season 2, Episode 3, Autoerotic Assimilation. Here's Aaron with the recap.
Rick, Morty, and Summer bump into one of Rick's old lovers on response to an alien distress call. Rick's former flame, Unity, is a collective parasitic hive mind that infects a planetary population and bends it to their will. Unity is as fascinated with Rick's radical individuality as he is with their ability to satisfy nearly any desire he can think of. Unfortunately, their relationship is totally toxic, leaving Unity spiraling into addiction and Rick suicidal. Speaking of toxic relationships, an argument over Rick's boundaries within the family explodes into a vicious argument between Beth and Jerry. And you know things are bad when you find yourself rooting for a disease-ridden, baby-eating, alien monster to wade in and break things up big John McCarthy style. So Jim, autoerotic assimilation, what'd you think?
I love it. I love that autoerotic assimilation.
Nothing better than autoeroticism is assimilation.
Add the distinctiveness of your squanch to our own. Wow. What do you say about this episode? I mean, it's good on so many levels, but it's also, it feels so personal. It feels like I'm getting a window into the souls of the people who wrote it. And I'm a little troubled by what I see, but also, I don't know, there's enough humor to not leave me entirely bummed at the end of this, but they really try hard to bum me out.
Yeah, no, it's that last minute or so is a real gut punch. Like, it's up there with, you know, something you'd see on The Leftovers on HBO.
Yeah.
Like, just bleak.
The darkest thing I've seen on the show yet.
Yeah, and it's like, it all makes sense in the context that says so much about Rick. I mean, this is the reason, I guess, like, you know, that it's impossible to kind of write Rick off, because, like, anyone that has this kind of depth of feeling, you know, and I'm not saying there's anything good there, but there's definitely humanity that can be identified with.
Sure. Yeah. It's in a bizarre way refreshing from the typical nihilistic view of Rick, while also being incredibly sad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a real fucker of an episode, and I don't feel like I've totally gotten my head around it.
Sure.
But here we are. Let's talk about it.
I think there's a lot of really funny things, like, you know, it's funny how they can make jokes and have addiction and things like that be funny right up until it's not.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, I really enjoyed Unity talking about, you know, I really shouldn't be driving this hovercopter. I really shouldn't be running 200,000 pediatric hospitals or 12 million deep fryers, but oh well, you know. And Unity's self-serving TV coverage, where they've got the anchors saying, you know, in other news, this isn't all as bad as it looks. We're in complete control. And also, grandkids, concerned family members, or total killjoys, and the way the kids are illustrated. It's just so fucking petty. And it's man, in just 24 minutes, they introduce a character who is a believable love interest for Rick, and you totally get why they're fascinated with each other, and you also totally get how terrible they are. And
oh,
like,
they're awful for each other.
It takes prestige dramas 4 or 5 seasons to tell the storytelling that they've got going on here. But then again, they don't have the ability to hang glide into a stadium full of fetishized sexual individuals while their fathers are rooting them on.
Like, what is the fantasy there? I mean, clearly you have something to prove to your father, or you feel like you do.
Yeah.
Is it to be like, you told me I couldn't be president, Dad, so here I am. And also, you told me I would never get a hot woman, so I've got I got football stadium full of them. Like,
it's more like, it's like, I got it to where it's like, you're so full of some kind of toxic shame that the only thing that can expunge it is a stadium full of your father saying, go, son, go. Like, that's, like that. That's the only way it can, you can shield yourself from the shame of the depravity you're putting yourself and these other people through.
I thought it felt like it was rooted in something that his father, you know, had told him, or just the way that his father had made him feel as a child.
Yeah.
And so he was trying to prove something to him.
And there's also, you know, it's a stadium full of people that vaguely look like his father. It looks like the thing that defines Rick's father and Rick's mind is like this very madman kind of Henry Crane establishment. Yeah. You know, like this guy was a foreman at a factory, or he was a middle management supervisor of an ad team, and he clips on his tie and he goes to work, damn it, and he gets his, so it very, very opposite of Rick, who's as far as an anti-establishment as you can get and still conceptualize a council of yourselves, I guess. Which isn't that anti-establishment. One of the many internal contradictions of Rick.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't set it up.
That's true.
The Rick C-137.
Those are lesser, all lesser Ricks.
Yeah.
All lesser.
But yeah, it definitely feels like, you know, it's a rebellion kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, look how far I've come living my life the way you said it shouldn't be lived.
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
Do you want to get a little deeper into the Unity plot? Because one thing that a lot of ink was spilt digitally about Rick's sexuality. Would you consider Rick pansexual?
Yeah, physically, certainly. Uh-huh. I mean, the people or the entities, whatever, these aliens that he's banging, they're of all sexual, or they're of all genders.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think so.
Is it like a natural inclination, or is it like a, is it like a, from a lifetime of experience leading you jaded to where you're always looking for bigger and crazier experiences? So
that's a fine question.
And also, like, what's the line? Like, if pansexuality is the destination you arrive after that journey, are you not, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he's found a line. I don't think he'll ever find a line. I mean, once you hang glide into a stadium with your dick out,
right, like, right,
your lines don't exist, man.
There's some kind of sexual, at least adjacent relationship with giraffes going on too. Like, that's pretty pan.
Yeah,
so that's pretty pan. When you go, I mean, I guess you're already outside your species, and you're outside even like your concept, like with a hive mind versus a singular mind.
Oh yeah, and that's why I kind of hesitated and why I qualified as physical, right? Because I don't know what it is, the Unity, but it is an entity, and whatever it is, I think, is the thing that Rick is really getting down with.
But what is, okay, so that's the next thing I wanted to talk about. Like, it's clear, maybe that I just answered my own question, because it's very clear that Unity is fascinated by Rick because he is just unapologetically ultra-individualistic in a way that, like, I wonder, you know, when they met, like, is that something that she realized from across a planetary bar, or did she try to assimilate him and he was just like not having it, or what? But the other direction, like, what's Rick's fascination with her? Because I don't think it's like, oh, you're a collective and I just think that's cool.
I think it's a challenge. I honestly think this is a challenge to Rick, this kind of being who can kind of encompass so much. In my opinion, challenges Rick, because if you look at the beginning of this episode, essentially, like, Rick wants to prove that he can party just as hard as she can and get just as crazy. And I feel like by the end of this, he has partied her into the ground.
Mm.
And that's what he's looking for. That's the feeling he wants.
Yeah. And she's also like, he says when she talks about her plan, like, you know, I'm wanting to take this planet and raise it up into a level one civilization, get a full galactic membership, and then take over the universe. I think he says unironically, oh, that's sexy. I like that. Like, he's attracted to that just crazy naked ambition. Like, if Rick gave more of a fuck, he might try to bend the galaxy in his will. But instead, he's, you know, that's kind of too much of a hassle. So I think he's attracted to that. And, like, he sees that as, like, a high achieving. Like, that's an ambitious thing. And he sees himself as a high achiever, ambitious. Mm-hmm. But he's also, like, super into hedonism. And she is, too. So it's, like, almost like that Unity, the it's pointless to try to decide which gender they are because they're pan gender themselves.
Yeah.
Unity represents that kind of ideal, but Unity realizes that it's kind of like, you know, when you grow up with people and, like, you go through high school and in college and young adulthood and, like, you're all kind of like little mini hedons, you know, you're running around, you're drinking, you're partying, like, every weekend, right? But eventually you get jobs, you get families, and you have to start making sacrifices to the hedonism to do the other things that you find in value in life. And Rick's like that friend that eventually you lose contact with or you only see once a year and you get in a lot of trouble with because they just never stop.
Mm-hmm.
And Unity doesn't want that for themselves. They want something more.
Yeah, and I think as pointed out in the letter at the end, can't help themselves when they're around Rick.
Right.
Because, you know, that individualism and that just party mode constantly is attractive to someone like Unity, but also it's detrimental to them.
Yeah, and it's where your balance point in that is very individualistic, but it's, you know, you got to find it for yourself, like whether you party once a weekend or once a month or once a year or every day. Like it's only a problem, I guess, if it's, you know, that's what they say. It's like you only have an addiction if it interferes with the rest of your life, right? Otherwise, it's just there's no difference between something you're addicted to and something you're just really enthusiastic about as a hobby, except for, boy, that thing that you really like doing is fucking with the rest of your life and causing you unhappiness.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons that I say this Unity presents a challenge to Rick is because when Rick and Unity are first reunited, it's made clear that Unity has advanced a lot, you know, beyond what Rick knew. I think it says, like, when we met, I was just a small town worth of people. Now I've got an entire planet here. Unity is thriving without Rick, and I think Rick takes exception to that.
So I think this would be a good place to pivot into the other kind of moral conundrum, which is Summer's problem with this whole thing.
Okay.
That, like, we're rooting for Unity's quote-unquote personal advancement and self-actualization, but it's coming at the expense of a galaxy, like, of a planet's worth of individuals and soon a galaxy. How do we feel about that?
That's where this episode gets real tricky. That's where Rick and Morty always gets tricky.
Yeah, and like I see this happens all the time where like people want to see freedom as absolute until it's like the Always Sunny episode where was it Mac and Charlie open up a bar where anything goes, and you know their idea of anything goes was a lot of like hot co-eds coming and getting naked and doing that, but then Frank's idea
fucking
of anything goes was running an illegal
was Deer Hunter.
I was running with some really bad shit. It's like, well, that's not what we think freedom is. And the reaction, like, it feels like, I don't, why is it that people see things in like freedom and liberty in terms of absolutes rather than like interlocking rings of like responsibility?
I don't know. I think it's hard to imagine what someone else's freedom looks like to them.
Yeah. Because like absolute freedom is just pure Darwinism. Like whatever you can will and might and make right is what it's going to be.
Right.
Whereas like I think most people, like even the people that like really want to preach absolute freedom, they have this Summer reaction where it's like, oh, well, maybe. And I don't know. It's like it just seems like that's, broadly speaking, what a lot of people ping pong between, like the desire for personal freedom, but then like, oh God, people might abuse it, so let's restrict that. But, you know, try to maximize my own personal freedom and minimize the freedom of people that are doing things I don't like.
Yeah, like, that line, I didn't know that freedom meant people doing stuff that sucks.
Yeah.
Is like so telling.
Yeah.
I really loved it. And Summer's angle on this whole thing is, where do you think the show comes down on it? Do you think it gives a clear, like, this is what we think freedom is? Or
I think it goes back to like kind of a discussion of the nihilism of last episode, is like Morty kind of has the most cogent response, which is like, you know, real life isn't perfect, but it's life.
Yeah.
And we're also part of life. We, speaking the like quote unquote, the good guys, the people that the universe, if it was rooting for someone to root for, the people that want to make things better. We're part of that life, and our desire to make things better and to uplift things and to accomplish things is part of that. So, you know, I mean, it's always a struggle between whether are people at their core good or bad. And it's always seemed obvious to me that like most people must be good or like highways wouldn't work. If you had a whole bunch of like,
I would argue they don't here in Cincinnati, but all
right. Right. But sure. It's like a 51-49 thing. I still think we're holding on to our fingernails to good. But you know what I mean? Like, that, like, no one would queue up ever. The highways would look like some kind of Mad Max Thunderdome if everyone is as psychotic as people, I think, a lot of people are afraid. Mm-hmm. So, like, lean into that, and we'll deal collectively with the assholes, then, you know, like, either running roughshod over everyone's individual freedoms or... But I don't know, that's...
Well, it's there's a question in here, I think, of overriding certain people's freedoms too, right?
Yeah.
Like, because do you think there in this episode there's an allegory about something to say about putting people in prison in general, because like you see what happens with Summer when she gets her way, right? And mm-hmm. and freedom reigns. Suddenly there's a huge race war that mm-hmm. erupts, and it becomes very clear that, oh, these people are actually assholes. Like Unity tried to tell us in that episode, these people are bad people. Mm-hmm. You know, he was a sex offender and mm-hmm. a pedophile, whatever, until I took over. Is the episode trying to make a statement about putting people in prison, or even more specifically about racism and how that relates to whether or not people should be put into prison?
Yeah, I mean, it's the thing is, it's a cartoon, so it's able to serve up these really binary perspectives. So like this planet
sure.
divided between cone and target nipple people. The only thing stopping them from waging a war of annihilation, like it's just like the Star Trek episode where like, oh, this guy's got a white, half of his face is white and half of it's black, but that guy's black on the left side, and they're mm-hmm. locked in this eternal struggle. Real life is like, yeah, that's what the borders of the war look like, but there's a vast amount of people that don't give a fuck, and there's a vast amount of people that also are like, oh, this is stupid, we should stop doing this. And mm-hmm. you know, it's trying to get everybody on the same page at the same time. That's the trick, right? Because there's always a fresh crop yeah. of people joining both sides of the battle lines
and trying to figure it out.
Yeah, and there's also, it's also very rare that like it's a symmetrical battle too. There's usually someone that's got, you know, things set up the way they like it, and the other people they're getting shit on, and that's mm-hmm. so where does the show come down on all that? It's I don't know, because it doesn't have an obligation to do anything but kind of hold this up. And because I think what they're trying to say ultimately is the things that divide us are kind of arbitrary and stupid. Like, we think it's really stupid to argue that cone people are better than target people. But what if the cone people have a whole bunch of pseudoscientific arguments about, like, well, if you look at the average intelligence of the target people, yeah. nipples, you let them run government, they're going to run it to the fucking ground. They're lazy. They like, it's not just the physical things are the way we kind of draw a lasso around all yeah, the other yeah. shit that we just want to, you know, lump on to other populations. So uh-huh. Like I said, it's like Rick and Morty's got this ability to be very, very smart and also really dumb and kind of one dimensional all simultaneously.
Yeah. Not need to do much more than entertain you.
Yeah.
But it does reach about it. Yeah. It does reach for those concepts yeah, very often.
Like this Beta 7 shit is just a drive by commentary on nice guys.
Okay.
And friend zone.
Sure. Yeah.
And not a like they don't need to spend any more than 45 seconds on it, because it's obviously, it's like look at it. Look how pathetic this existence is.
Yeah.
What is this in for? Like, if Beta 7's in this for a pragmatic exchange of goods and services, then he shouldn't care that Rick's showing up. Or if he does care, it's more of like, well, this is disrupting to my agreement with Unity, but that's not what's going on.
The new husband in The Weatherman, was his name Jerry?
I could tell
his
you.
His name was Jerry. I just can't help but think like Beta 7 is very much like that dude. Mm. Just like gatekeeping. Yeah. And like, yeah.
Oh, and loves it. Loves it. Yeah. Uh-huh. But like, as Rick probably rightly points out, that like, you're not, you know, you want more than just pragmatic exchange, you little fucker.
Right.
And Patton Oswalt is so good.
He is.
At, you know, instantly conveying all, like being in on the joke. And yeah, he's
not
having
really to say it, just bringing it through in the tone of voice.
Yeah. And the Borg is like this. I just really, that's also really fucking funny. Just having the Borg be the beta to, mm-hmm. You know, Unity's hot collective. That's really funny. And Rick is the cosmic Chad. Then there's a couple other things I thought was really funny. Like Rick's, he sees like Unity destroy a town just for like, you know, and
yeah.
There's so many things, because if you've had any kind of interesting life, you've been in situations where you're at a rager and everyone's having fun, but then someone goes a little too far.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is the equivalent of setting the couch on fire, right? And like, there's a little bit like Rick's eyes go wide, like you kind of like, oh, haha, yeah, this is fun. Hey, where's my grandkids? They're safe, right? I thought that stuff was right on.
It's good to see that Rick does have a line.
Yeah.
The line is somewhere, but finding it is real damn hard.
Yeah.
I think Unity found it.
But also, that line is also in the same zip code as his general concern for his alcohol level and his blood. Because okay. Where's my grandkid? Also, my cup's empty. Like,
yeah.
But there's also an explicit link between there. Like, his you know, this is the Wubba Lubba Dub Dub hypothesis to its natural conclusion. Like, Rick is using all these drugs and experiences to numb himself from his existential pain.
Yeah.
And, like, when the existential pain starts creeping in on his conscious, he's looking for, oh, my drink's in. You know what'll fix this? Either my grandkids being safe or me being way drunker than I already am.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing they kind of do in like a drive-by way, which caught my attention, because I woke up this morning and I read an article that Barcelona just ruled that women can go topless in all public pools. Apparently,
okay.
This is something that has been culturally the custom, but there's been some complaints that some pools in the city were saying you can't, you got to cover up your nipples, but the men don't. And the Barcelona's like, settle for all. The whole city, it's a topless for everybody.
Accompanying law, every town must have a public pool.
But then in this episode, there's like this kind of pointed thing where Morty right away whips his shirt off and shows his nipples to say like, hey, look, I'm not a target or a cone nipple. And Summer's like, yeah, me too, but just take my word for it. And also during the race war, all the women are clothed. It's like there's a – they don't even point it out, but there's an absurdity that you can't have animated nipples unless they're boy nipples. Even alien nipples are verboten if they're attached to an anthropomorphic.
Yeah, nipples that are unrecognizable as nipples.
Uh-huh. Or if you don't anthropomorphize, because we've seen all types of eight-legged, weird, tentacled things with boobies and testicles and cocks sprouting on the show, but like, it can't be humanoid nipples.
That tells me that Standards and Practices thinks that nipples are not form or function. They're location. Nipples are location.
Yeah.
What could I put there that wouldn't be considered a nipple? A Statue of Liberty?
Yeah. Leaning Towers of Pisa.
A fully animated horse head? Like, what what wouldn't you consider a nipple in that location?
Yeah. It's because I'm not going to be one of those types that's like, there's nothing there. It's more of like...
Nothing. There you go. You solved it.
Yeah. You just have
put nothing there.
You go to Barbie route. I mean, it's definitely a societal change we're going under, but, and like, I definitely see where people are like, well, it's, of course it's different. Like, it's sexualized, but it's like, but we're the ones that brought that context to it. So we could also choose not to. And obviously lots of parts in the world don't have this arbitrary, like, male nipple, female nipple distinction, or it's not as rigid. So,
yeah, I think all that is, you know, the recognition that this is a sexual part of the human body is kind of built into humans, but the shame of it, the desire to cover that up and not show it, not have that be part of who you are, I think is truly artificial, right?
But it's also
that's the construct.
There's also something weird and patriarchal too, because if you talk to women, like broad shoulders are secondary sexual features. Strong forearms are sexually it's a lot of women will get weak at the knees with a guy with nice forearms rolling up his sleeves. So like, is that sexualized? Isn't it super convenient that all the things sexualized about us, we don't have any problems flexing in public except for our yangers, which for what it's worth seem like a global taboo. Like, nobody just goes around their privates hanging out.
Yangers
doesn't seem like it.
Uh-huh.
So, I don't know. We're talking about publicizing the nipple. That's all.
Yeah. Let's get it out there.
Yeah. Come on. Come on, English-speaking world. Free the nipple. I mean, the Chaos song, Do You Feel It, at the end. this whole scene of, like, Rick being completely disassociated from his family when they come to him, because Beth has this emotionally charged conversation with him, doesn't even register. He goes out in his lab and unambiguously plans his own suicide.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that foils him is his level of drunkenness and the amount of substance he's ingested.
Yeah.
I mean, holy shit. Why is Rick suicidal in this instant, do you think?
I think there's a combination here. I think it's obviously certainly Unity dumping him. And him realizing like that he's kind of the negative influence on this entire relationship to begin with.
Yeah.
But I think it's also a combination of Morty and Summer having just bounced on him and him having said, basically, I don't need you. You guys mean nothing to me. Uh-huh. He's kind of kicked everyone out of his life at this point.
Yeah.
And then
and went all
when
in
Unity,
on
yeah,
the debauchery
put
train.
All his chips in on Unity. And then when she dumps him, he's got nowhere to turn. The response should be to go to try and reconnect with Morty and Summer in some way. But, you know, he's not capable of that in the moment.
Yeah, and it's also because, like, I, you know, It's also the tale of someone that has like an intense, like just a real, like almost spiritual, physical connection with somebody, but their goals and other things in life are not aligned. And like that's always feels like one of the more painful things to get over because, you know, we're kind of driven by our sex. And like this also seemed like the most satisfying way that Rick can plausibly, you're never going to find it in a singular mind. You're never going to be able to dive bomb into a stadium full of redheads with your father cheering you on.
Right.
And any other thing. And so it's like, he's like, everything else is going to be downhill from here. So what do you do? And
sure,
the logical thing to do is like turn towards inward satisfaction and an emotional connection over the physical. But like Rick's not really well equipped for that kind of self inspection.
Yeah, I agree. I would also say like, in that case, what I think Rick should be considering is if this is actually the best thing that he's ever going to have in his life.
Mm.
Because before he met Unity, he probably would have said something else was that, right?
That's true, yeah.
So removing the future opportunity to have something even better, meet another entity, meet, you know, another entity like Unity that is also has the goals aligned. Like that opportunity
that'll follow him
might
into
be in his future.
The spiral to hell.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's what he wants. I don't know. But,
that's the realization. Like, oh my god, if I found like the perfect version of Unity, we'd both be dead in a year.
Or it could change him. Like that's the thing that I don't think, you know, rationally you should be considering, but I don't think is going through your head if you're Rick Sanchez in this movie.
Yeah, because has he ever found something that's irreplaceable? Because it doesn't seem like anything is. He can always skip to dimensions and right. find something that's 99.999% as good to him.
Yeah, doesn't this imply that there have to be infinite unities out there, some of which his goals would align with his?
Yeah,
they could
dimension hopping.
Yeah.
I bet those Ricks are awful protective of those unities.
But he's the Rickest Rick.
That's true.
I feel like he could handle
him. Waltzing and I mean that's the other thing, is like, you know, would you like, so if you found, let's say you found someone that's 90% is compatible with you, and then you get married to them, you get assimilated by them, whatever, and then a couple years later you meet someone you suspect is 91% better, or like 91% instead of 90. At what point you're like, I want to roll the dice an extra 1%, or even if it's 10%, like it's 100% versus 90, like that's where it's like, you know, even if he's the Rickest Rick, like he would have to scale several boundaries to get the unity in the unity's, like, you know, to pry her away from the other Rick, just to give, I don't know. That's the thing I would think about.
Yeah.
Cause once you find something that works, stick with it until, you know, it doesn't.
The end of this episode worked. It hit me fucking hard.
Yeah, no, I it's one thing that like, I always just, when I watch it, and I also have this song on one of my thumbs up playlists. Every time it comes on, I think about it, and like, you know, because the lyrics are kind of interesting. It is a breakup song, but it's like a person's like challenging to the other person to be honest and be real. And like, you know, like I didn't, that's like, you know, like to kind of reconnect. And if we did that, then this thing wouldn't end. And it's, you know, it's also very fitting for the tone. And it's just a badass song.
Yeah.
It's fucking a slap and in addition to all those other things.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't even talked about the B plot.
Okay.
Fortunately, I think we can blow through the B plot. In like a minute. Jerry is. So where's the boundary violation here? Because like, I guess like, I feel like if you rent, it's
all on Rick's side. Rick has violated the boundaries.
Yeah. But like if the deal is that Rick gets one bedroom in the garage, then like Jerry's been an asshole for going in the garage and going through Rick's stuff.
Did they say that's the deal? I
don't know. That's why I'm saying, like, I don't know what was the deal. I don't know what's the deal when Rick moved in. I don't know what the deal that Rick has wheedled his way into now. Obviously, Jerry still has his weed whacker out in the garage, so.
Yeah, I guess I always assumed it was a de facto garage takeover. It was just like, well, Rick's got all of his shit out here. And
yeah, and it's scary.
We don't.
Explodey.
Yeah, we don't know what to make of it, so let's not go in there. And then now that they, you know, he needs to find the weed whacker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. I think Jerry has the right of it.
Oh, for sure.
In this episode, like, Rick is manipulating Beth.
Mm-hmm.
He's taking advantage of her affection and approval seeking of his. Mm-hmm. Rick's walking all over him, and Beth is letting it happen. And by extension, Jerry sort of feels like he has to let it happen.
Yeah.
Because it's not his dad, it's Beth's dad.
There's also a little bit of, you know, is Jerry mad about the fact that Rick put a hatch in this garage? Or is he mad about the fact that he's kind of vying for Beth's affections? And also that Rick is pointing out his obvious inadequacies?
Yeah.
You know, is it like, because like if Jerry's securing himself, the conversation about like, hey, your dad can't keep an intergalactic criminal under our garage, right? That's, we're on the same page, is different from like all the vindictive and the passive aggressive stuff that comes out, mm-hmm. that leads to just aggression. I mean, at the end, like if you watch what they're saying to each other, they're screaming, like he's calling her like you know, I'm not the child in this relationship. You're the child. And she's saying just terrible, terrible things to him. Just really vicious. And the only thing that like stops it is Blim Blam the Korlock coming in like, Yeah. What is so funny about it is like how Jerry and Beth both had like these radically different takes on what Rick was doing based on their, deepest fears or greatest hopes for Rick. And Blim Blam the Korlock is exactly in the middle.
Confirms both, but denies both.
Yeah. Like they're both equally right. They're both equally wrong.
But they're both assholes.
Yeah. And that's the thing is like this, you know, you've seen this kind of call out confrontation a bunch of different times. What elevates on Rick and Morty is the fact that he can't open the garage door and the garage door is super slow. And
they just let a baby eater out into the world.
Yeah. I mean, along with the flaming eels, along with the flaming laser eels, like there's a lot of bad shit that gets out of Rick. That's the other thing is like, you know, we talked about last season when he lands the flying saucer and no one notices. Like there's so much weird shit going on in this house all the time. Like how Rick has to have some kind of, you know, anti-muggle device installed or something that makes people. But I did like Blim Blam's like flipping them off as he walks away. That was really fun too. And then, you know, for what it's worth, Jerry won this argument because Beth takes it to heart and puts her foot down with Rick. And Rick's just too preoccupied to really notice or care.
Yeah, I have to wonder if Jerry would even be capable of doing what Beth does here. Because I think Beth does, you know, have some self-reflection after this and realizes, okay, yeah, I might be right about some of this, but I'm also letting Rick walk all over me.
And Beth is, without having some kind of crazy plot against her, say, like, you know, without the presence of Cronenberg monsters, she can mount up enough backbone to do difficult things that need to be done.
Yeah.
Whereas Jerry seems like, unless he's absolutely forced by the situation, he doesn't have those bones.
No, I think Jerry does the physically difficult sometimes, but Beth does the emotionally difficult more often. Like loving Jerry.
It's work.
Yeah. And there's the tag on the end of the episode, which, I don't know, we kind of talked about Rick wanting to see Unity, but being boxed out by Beta 7, Beta Shit 7. I thought that was just funny.
Yeah, arming weapon systems. Oh, you wish you had weapon systems. And then the real funny thing is I don't know why I keep saying Jordy. Morty sitting there riding shotgun like, I thought we were going to the movies. You know, like Rick. It's like, that's so fucking Rick. Like, he's just like drinking on the way to the theater, gets a wild hair to go see Unity. I don't know. It's, you don't need any more joke than the fact that Morty is an afterthought in that situation.
Lay it down. Let me see your hand. Show me what you got.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwais is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga-sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
All right, Jim, dare we open this portal to Dimension BM77 and go plot to the future where we access behind-the-scenes details, trivia, and spoilers for future episodes. Also, this is the off-ramp for everybody that doesn't want that. Jim, what was your takeaways from BM77?
I learned in the commentary that this was an episode that was punted from season one.
Yeah.
They thought about doing it and didn't. I wonder how that changes the dynamics, the relationship dynamics, if they do this episode earlier. Because I know it wasn't always planned to be exactly this episode.
Mm-hmm.
But man, having an explosive fight between Jerry and Beth.
Yeah.
Having, you know, Rick essentially fail to kill himself.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of shit to load onto season one.
Yeah, and... Yeah, I mean, it's funny because it seems like what they did is they started kind of like the Rick and Morty writing room by writing down like every science fiction trope or concept they could. And like, you know, and I wonder when they pulled like, oh, Rick is going to date a, you know, hive mind collective, if they realized the kind of hammer that they're going to bring down at the end. Because like, it's like you might be right. It might have gotten lucky. Maybe if they did in season one, it doesn't go this dark because it was pre Wubba Lubba Dub Dub being translated to I'm in pain. And
yep.
Or they might have like maybe started poking on it. It's like, oh man, this is like a really heavy subject. Let's like leave it for later. I wonder.
Well, the writers themselves could have been in different places mentally.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, and we know the writers' room. I think they're definitely a big turnover from two to three. But I'm assuming there's like new people in there in almost every season.
You bring
people in to try out. So I just thought like whether it's accidental luck or whether they said, oh yeah, we need to put this back on a shelf. You're right. It would have been. It would have made the show a lot darker to talk about this stuff early in season one or any point in season one.
Definitely.
I thought there was some interesting discussion about like Dan talking about how he wanted the cold open to be a lot more like Ridley Scott alien.
Yep.
You know, with like they're wearing full vacuum suits, and he was having this conversation with the directors, like, you guys made me, you worship the almighty budget, and they're like having this conversation, and it's like, I don't think it's like, and then he gets to a point, and it's like, oh, right, the puking, they couldn't be wearing helmets because of the puking.
Yeah,
like it's like I wonder.
You always get in these commentaries half remembered things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's fine. Like everybody has imperfect memories. I definitely do.
Yeah.
But it's always fun to see them connecting dots live on the commentary track.
Yeah. Yeah. I also thought it was kind of interesting. Justin Roiland is talking this story. I don't know if it's an actual true story, if it's just something he's put together pastiche, but he remembers this documentary about like wrestlers and how they go on the road and they'd be doing piles of coke and having orgies with eight women. And they'd come home to their wife and kids and wonder why they can't get hard anymore. Because it's like, that's why I asked you about the whole pansexuality. It seems like in the writer's room, it's not so much a Rick is pansexual because it seems like he obviously has a type. It's more of like, he is just so fucking jaded by doing rails of Kalax off of triple-breasted Martian prostitutes with 17 interdimensional vaginas that he just needs to be hang gliding dressed as Uncle Sam, dive bombing into a stadium full of redheads. Why his dad cheers him on, and there's got to be a giraffe in the corner. Which the giraffe wasn't exactly sucking his thumb and rocking to it, but the giraffe looked like he had some thoughts about what had just happened to him.
I bet that's a lot for a giraffe to take in.
Yeah. You know, the other thing is, like, I read a lot of commentary about this episode, and a lot of people talked about, you know, like the addiction spiral and all that kind of stuff. Not a single person had the take about, what is the ethics of having sex with a planet full of people that are being commandeered by another intelligence. Like, on one level, this is like, an entity super roofied the whole planet, and Rick's having non-consensual sex, but with the consensual consensual consciousness that's commandeering the body. Where the fuck do you score that? Is that why no one wrote about it? Because, like, I don't know.
I mean, I know which category to put that mark in.
Oh, yeah?
And it's not in Rick's favor.
No. Well, it's not in Unity's. Not in even,
No, definitely not.
And also, like, they're all terrible people doing terrible things in these moments, so...
Yeah.
But I thought that was kind of, in today's internet culture, the fact that, like, that's like a vacuum. Like, no one brought it out. Like, wow, interesting. What did you make of the headcanon that Dan Harmon busted out in his commentary, that the yellow liquid that Rick pours on the creature and then imbibes himself synchronizes all timelines of himself, so he wasn't just going to kill himself, he was going to kill the concept of Rick Sanchez from the fucking universe.
And he killed every concept of that creature, too.
Yes. Less problematic, but...
Yeah, yeah. No,
I don't know. Maybe that creature's got a crazy depth experience and sensitivity and intelligence and whatnot. But
it might. But yeah, I mean, I went directly from watching this episode into watching the commentary.
Uh-huh.
And as hard as that ending hit me without the commentary, when mm-hmm. Dan said that, I was like, fuck.
Yeah. And also, it's like. The more you know about Rick and Morty, the darker it gets, because we know in season 3 that there are versions of Rick deviated off the central finite curve that they're decent people
uh-huh.
that have like rich lives with their families and their daughters, and you know,
and Rick he's killing all them too.
Yeah, yeah. Like it's not just that I'm depressed and like all the miserable Ricks are depressed and we're not worth it, but like we're willing to take the infinite versions of Rick that are healthy and well adjusted with us.
Yeah, I mean it's
and oh the other
I wouldn't normally call it this, but self-destructive in the most literal way possible.
Yeah, to the nth degree. The other thing I thought is like when I gave it a second thought is like, how does Rick exist with an infinite amount of Ricks that are infinite amount of fucked up, and they can any of them at any time can take a substance and kill them all at one time? Like, how has that never happened?
And presumably there are versions of him that did do that in this scenario, right? In this very moment, like there would have been some that succeeded.
Holy
shit.
That
were a little less fucked up.
Oh, well, yeah. Wow.
And so he should disappear in that moment, even though he wasn't able to do it himself.
Unless they're suggesting that Rick at some bottom level.
Number one question that Dan and Justin don't give a fuck about, like, right here, everybody.
At some point, that Rick is just like, it's impossible for him to kill himself because he just doesn't, you know, there's something there that stays his hand, or he's like, you know, that only happens when he's so blackout drunk that he's going to always stumble out of it. Still. Really strains the concept of infinite.
Yeah, it really narrows it
a little
more than I'm comfortable with.
Also, I wonder, like, if there's, like, this... Maybe there's limits to the synchronization. Like, he's talking about, like, it's going to take, you know, X amount of deviation off that standard finite curve or central finite curve.
Yeah.
If it takes everybody.
Now we're just inventing our own headcanon here.
Well, it is interesting, because I don't think this is actually canon. I think it's just Dan's personal headcanon, because, like, the rest of everyone else kind of, like, oohed and aahed over it, too. So, There you go.
Think it's before you speak, Dan. Jesus, it introduces a lot of intricacies here that you probably didn't consider.
What do you think? You can just get drunk and get on a DB commentary and talk about your own goddamn show? The temerity.
Pickle Me This is distributed by Bald Move in association with Starburns Audio. It's produced by Jason Smith and Scott Porch from Starburns, and myself, Ben Aaron from Bald Move. All music featured on this podcast is from the Rick and Morty soundtrack, available from Sub Pop Records. Please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To discover the many other great shows we do, please check out baldmove.com and starburns.audio. If you appreciate what we do and want to directly support us, consider joining our club at club.baldmove.com to get access to exclusive bonus audio and video features. Finally, you can follow us on your favorite social media @BaldMove. See you next time.